Log Talk Radio.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life. The greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending day by day that the world somewhere can make a change. We are all a part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day, just you and me. Well, send them your heart, so they know that someone cares, and their lives will be stronger and free. As God has shown us, and so we all must lend a helping hand. We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones to make a brighter day. So let's not give in.
Oh, there's a choice we're making. We'll
Father, this coming up. I want you to be ready. Ethan, Angela, I plan to be at 11 telephone call. God is able to do anything to feel that God has got us together. This is 2023. And some of you are saying, I'm going to get the Father's day. I want you to be here with the Lord's day. And God is going to go back a little time, listen to me and believe in me. Tonight, as we should be able to tell her, I'll show that she had a respect for that. God is lavish on her again. And we need to take Psalms 23, Lord, he's my shepherd. I should not want him. As many calls, and I'm saying, I'm praying. You, Brother Joe, and you hear that, at least I'm praying for you. Now, some scriptures I'm going to give you tonight. My temptation, Psalms 118, and Psalms 91. But God, give me those scriptures. It's something he wants you to do at this 9 o'clock hour. He wants you to know that every door closed will be opened up. Allow us to come together one more time. Now, some of you need to call me. You're running wild. He's a bishop. I'm praying tonight for you and me. I'm going to take three people and give this number. 515-605-9898. I got a message for them. When they call, I know their message. You call me, Mary, at 708-582-0372. I'm praying for you, Sister Mary Scott. I'm praying for you and your family. Sister Tanya Scott, I'm praying for you up in Chicago. God bless you. And I want to tell you all this with you. We're getting ready to go into Chin Chin. Getting ready for God today. And you should know every day to be God today. And you should understand God is going to open up the doors for you. I'm saying God is going to stand for you. Jerry, I'm praying for you. Those that are just graduated, I'm praying for you that God will look every girl for you. That God has allowed us one more time. Thank you. One more time. God's ladder. One more time. Let me go. God has allowed us to come together one more time tonight. I'm praying for you, you, and even you. Some of you have lost your way. But I heard him say, let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me, my Father. How's that many mentioned? I want to posit love to you tonight. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. And I want to tell you, the storm is over in your life. I want to tell you tonight, God got a blessing with your name on it. Now, some of you need to plant a seed going into June 10th. I don't know what I'm going to do for June 10th, but the 4th of July coming up. But I want you to look up and live. I'm praying for every letter, every telephone call. You know, the family, the guy that had the accident, the road, and his family. But I'm praying for some of you. Can't go out and have a good time without somebody getting shot or killed. There's no sorrow on earth that heaven cannot heal. God had opened up a door and allowed us to come together one more time. And I want to tell you, it's your time. Jerry, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you, Pauline. Every lover, every telephone call, give me a call where I can pray with you for something. I want to tell you, Regina, I have all is well. 708-582-0372. Mary Hawkins called me. I got a word for you. And, you know, I'm giving words out personally. Pearl William called me. I got a word for you and a scripture, and I'm going to give it directly to you. God allowed us. I want you to stay in prayer all this month. Stay in prayer. Let me in. Let's see how I'm interested. East, west, north, and south. Come on.
If I can get everybody in the audience to sing it with us and know what we're singing, if it's right. Y'all know it's right, and if you say yes. Choir, I want you to sing it one time, Paul. And then the audience gonna sing it for us. 1, 2, 1. Well, do we have anybody out in the audience that's ready to take this right now?
Nobody getting healed. Nobody getting delivered tonight. And all is well. Take time out. Take time.
Finally find that thing you've always wanted in a place on apartments.com.
You know? Let's do it. It's not new. I want to tell you tonight the storm is over. The storm of jealousy, hate storm is over in your life. God getting ready to carry you to the next level tonight. And as Detroit Mass Cry saying the storm is over, I want to tell you whatever in your life is over with. You just give over to God. I hear somebody saying, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Exodus 14:14 says, step back. God said, let me fight this battle, Moses. You can't fight it by yourself. And I want to tell you the storm of hate, jealousy, the storm is over. You got to give God the victory. I say, our ancestors are trying to tell you, wherever you might be, whatever you might be doing, the storm is over. Jerry, happy birthday, the storm is over. And I want to tell you tonight, in Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, where it might be, the floods, and I heard about the storms and the floods in Texas. I heard about the tsunami coming. The storm is over. You got to let God in. Body, mind, soul, and spirit, I say.
Thank you.
My beloved son, that what Jesus said. God said, this is my beloved son, and I want you to acknowledge that.
All of us, all such of us sometimes,
only have 1 hour left. But Jesus did not place any limits on his prayer. He felt like praying all night. He prayed all night. He did not, that it took 4 days. He continued his prayer. One of the sad and tragic things that has happened to the church today, church is great. The purpose of church. Yes, Lord. You don't have to take prayer meetings anymore. Just to get a crowd of people out. But the thing is, if you have a successful plan, you think that's what some hell is. That would do well to return to the practice of pride. Just as it happened with him, and let us be known up into a deep. So that the first man went off into a deep sleep. But Jesus was preoccupied with something that was heavy upon his heart. Jesus was struggling with something that he knew would be inexcusable, that he knew would be inevitable. He knew that the tragedy of Calvary was unavoidable, and that the pathway that he had chosen, that being the wilderness, ultimately led to the cross. And so he prayed and knew and meditated and talked with God above. In this spiritual atmosphere, in this caught up in his prayer, in his continuous prayer, during this spiritual theophany, he had heavenly visitors. I wish somebody would show me. The disciples forsook him, as it were. They did not leave him physically, but they did leave him from the standpoint of Israel. They went to sleep. They left him alone. As they did in Gethsemane, they left him alone. As they did in Gethsemane, they went to sleep. But while struggling along, heaven was witnessing the weight of his struggle. I wish you knew what I was talking about. An angel saw that his closest friend had gone to sleep. His very closest friend had gone to sleep. And heaven dispatched two visitors to the mountain while he prayed. These visitors were noted visitors. Well-known visitors. Visitors who left their imprint and their impacts and inputs upon time and history. These visitors were Moses and Elijah. Or Moses and Elijah. That's what we mean when we say Elijah. Moses, the exponent of the Lord. And Elijah, the exponent of prophecy.
to honor and venerate visitors. Visited with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration while he spoke. While he turned for fire a little while and went into conversation with these heavenly travelers. They talked on a theme. And the theme that they talked on, according to the record, was the theme of his deceit. Their conversation revolved around him and his death on the cross at Jerusalem. That's what they talked about. They talked about the tragedy of Calvary. They talked about the awfulness of Calvary. They talked about the grossness of sin that could bring the Son of God to the ignominious death on the cross. They talked about the Son of God who was being treated like the Son of Man. They talked about the Holy One who to be put up for all sinners. I wish somebody would pray with me tonight. They talked about the Prince of Peace who was to be treated as a Prince of Death. That's what they talked about. And when they had dealt with this great thing and was about to depart, the sleeping disciples woke up, and the theophany was too great. The glory of the occasion was too dazzling. And the experience was too real. Think about it, that exciting apparently of the senses of recognition in these disciples. They had never seen Moses before. They had never seen Elijah before. But these folk had been dead hundreds of years. But so they were gone. And yet when they looked back, they recognized who they were. Pray with me if you please. They recognized who they were. And I heard Peter exclaim, as the record here, not knowing what he was saying, just being overshadowed and being overcome. Master, Lord, we are built three tabernacles. One for Moses, one for Elijah, and one to be. We are memorialized this occasion. We are set up stones, temples, and landmarks that the ancients would know what happened on these grounds. Now, when God blotted out Moses and blotted out Elijah, it was not that the world should ignore him or ignore that contribution to the world. None of the world. For you see, the law played its part. And prophecy played its part. And Jesus constantly poured and referred to both law and prophecy. In fact, Jesus could not be understood without the Old Testament. The New Testament would be unintelligible without the Old. I wish you prayed with me. Many of the ceremonies, many of the rites, many of the doctrines, many of the concepts, many of the ideas would make no sense if we could not find that background in the Old Testament. about the Messiah. We wouldn't know anything about the immortality, the kingdom of God, and all these things. We wouldn't know anything about the what we call ethical religion if we did not have the Old Testament to consult. The Old Testament contained both law and prophecy. But you see, all of them were just schoolmasters to bring us to Christ. I don't believe you know what I mean tonight. They were just schoolmasters to bring us to Christ. Moses did his part in his thou shalt not. Moses did his part, establishing the one God idea in establishing monotheism. Moses did his part in contributing the world ethics and laws that have lived from his time to our very own. His contribution is great today in the world of Jewish truth. No lawyer can ever forget Moses. No law-abiding citizen can ever forget Moses. Moses was on the mountain. Elijah, when it comes to the ethics of Israelitic religion, he was among those men who taught Israel that God is not so concerned about your pigeons and your doves. What you ought to do is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly before your God. Feel like that was on the mountain with Jesus. So my brothers and sisters, when Peter, John, and James woke up and saw a company of this stature visiting with Jesus in this awful hour there on the mountain, he claimed, let us build 3 tabernacles. Let's leave some landmarks here. Let's leave something here for posterity. Let's leave something here that those who come in generations after us will know what happened on this mountain. But when they were about to be carried away and perpetuate Judaism, when they were about to be carried away and perpetuate possibly prophecy as it stood and as it was in that day, a cloud of the Lord overshadowed these heavenly visitors, cut them off from view. And out of that cloud they heard a voice. And that voice was, this is my beloved son. Hear him. You've already heard Moses. You've already heard Elijah. You've heard Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. You heard all of it. You've heard what the law had to say. And you've heard what prophets had to say. But both law and prophecy have been working in one direction. And that direction was toward Jesus. For all in Rome before Jesus was merely working up to him. And when my law became the fulfillment of law and prophecy. Oh Lord, and so I heard as the cloud rolled past. And some of them out and blooded them out. And the fires came through the cloud. And this is my son. Oh Lord. Moses was my son. Daniel was my son. Elijah, who was my son. Amos and Obadiah and Zephaniah. It's your Lord.
Come on, to me.
You're the Holy Spirit. You're the Holy Spirit. You are Lord. You are Lord. You're coming along the wall. Yes, the fire of God never stops. So you keep that going, because you wanted to choose my father. Some of you didn't listen to what I said earlier. So God got something special for you. And you can't wait to get away.
To God, number two, the position that they held in the city government, they were dedicated to that, to do a good, a just, and a righteous job. But that the favor that they inspired toward them created in danger. Those native Babylonians conspired to get rid of. Get rid of. So they said, well, now, we spread the background of these Hebrew people.
Yes.
We know something about their theology.
Yes.
We know something about their religious culture.
Yes.
We know that they do not participate in idolatry. And in the dedication and worship of other gods. Somewhere in their archive, somewhere in their sacred writings, they have something which says, thou shalt have no other God before me. I believe that if we can legislate and get included in the law that governs the dedicatorial service, the dedication of a God out in the plains of the rock, a few days to come, if we can get something put in there, but every citizen must bow his knee.
Yeah.
I believe we'll have these people.
Yeah.
I believe we'll have. If we make it compulsory upon every citizen, certainly every officer of the city will have to do it. And if they do it, we will have made them compromise their faith. And if they don't do it, we will have them, because the law is, if you don't, will be thrown into a fire. I wish I had somebody to pray with me. And so the Hebrews can go into argument and into protest and all this kind of a thing. They had resolved what their stand was.
Yes.
They were sure of what their position would be.
Yes.
They went on. They didn't play sick.
Uh-huh.
They didn't hypocrite.
No.
They went on out there,
yes,
to the dedication.
Uh-huh.
Well, they could have played sick.
Yes.
They could have concocted some excuse.
Uh-huh.
But that too was in principle a compromise.
Yes.
That too would have hit their hand.
Yeah.
They were all out there. And when the instruments began to play,
yeah,
when the announcement was made that everybody was to pay their adoration and that tribute to the God,
yeah,
that the king was dedicated,
uh-huh,
and everybody bowed, they didn't bend over.
Uh-huh.
A token that they were about to bow, they stood up.
Yeah.
They stood up. And I think that this position, this attitude, this disposition that they took should be a challenge to the people of God today.
Yeah.
In the face of our modern evil, in the face of modern injustice, in the face of modern unrighteousness, in the face of modern ungodliness,
yeah,
your position ought to be sure and determined.
Yeah.
man's body and ought not to be that way. If you believed in what is just, if you believed in what is true, don't finagle, don't compromise. Don't try to stand on both sides. Take a side. Take a side. Pray with me if you please. These young Hebrews said, we aren't going to compromise. We aren't going to compromise. Well, you can't compromise with evil. You can't compromise with sin. No, no. What sin is like the Paul throws in the serpent. When he's called, he won't bother me. He's still. He's unable, but then if you put sin and evil into your bosom when it rolls up, it's the same old serpent. You gotta take a stand. Pray with me if you please. So these young men did not compromise. They did not bow or token when they stood up. You know the story of how they were accosted and arrested and how they were brought in to the king. King expressed unto the father and said, young men, possibly in so many words you didn't understand. You are affable young men. You're fine young men. I've admired your work, and I hold what you've done in high esteem. I'd like to go back over the whole thing and give you a chance to clear yourself.
Yeah.
These young men said the things that every Christian ought to say when it comes to declaring where you are.
Yeah.
They said to the king, King, we may as well let you know now as later, we are not going to bow. We may as well right now tell you that we are not going to bow. But we believe that God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us. We know, praise God. Yeah. We understood what the law was. And it wasn't a matter of misunderstanding. No, no. It wasn't a matter that we didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. We knew what to do, and we knew what we were expected to do.
Yeah.
But we simply didn't bow because we don't believe in bowing. And we may as well be fair and honest with you.
Yeah.
If you go back over again, we are not going to bow. And we believe the God who we serve. And we believe the God of Isaac and of Jacob. We believe the God of Moses and the prophets. You're able to deliver. Oh, yeah. And he who believe that he can get him out of it. But if he chooses not to, we're still not going down. All of us, I think we ought to put a note there. You know what Ruth said? But not in no wise will we bow. That is to say, if it doesn't deliver us, we're still not going to bow. No, no. You know, a losing person or a poor kid there.
Yeah.
You say, well, if I get in trouble, the Lord, so get me out.
Yeah.
You know, too far and still like God with evil.
Yeah.
Just another trouble. Yeah. But, it might not have been his plan to deliver them.
Oh,
he might have got glory out of their suffering.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. You know, it's better to die for something than it is to live, you know, and sacrifice them and compromise. Oh, that's the reason that we believe in Jesus, and we do. The thing that you believed in, he died by. Oh, Lord, he didn't compromise. He's Jesus about God. He didn't compromise his faith in God. on his knees.
You felt that night alone in the garden. Oh, Lord, the cup is bitter. Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, death is in here. A holy crown is in here. Oh, Lord, a cross is in here. Oh, Lord, while they're mocking soldiers, scourging and whipping all night long, embarking on it. If it is your will, let this cup pass. Doctor, if it's not your will, I'm willing to fall down. Whatever you tell me to do, oh Lord, if the cross is your way, I'm willing to go the way of the cross. If the cross is probably yours, never let that go your mind. Oh Lord, and that's all the Hebrew boys put that same attitude. We're not going to die. And you know what y'all did? You know what it did. Oh, he's so swift to my set. You took him down to that part of the point. And I can make it that part of the point. And put the heat on that part. Oh, my God. And those boys, the faith that they had in God, vindicated that night. They said something that I'm going to tell you tonight. You're able. She's able.
He snores like an angry rhino.
Never heard an angry rhino.
It has your one.
What does it sound like?
What's that?
Talking. Both of them were Christians, but one had backslid. And they'd gotten into a conversation. And the backslider was complaining because everything had gone wrong for them. Christian was trying to encourage. And in the conversation, went something like this. Because sometimes, no matter how strong you've been in the faith, things will go wrong for you. I just want to leave this with you tonight. This is what they were saying. There's two folk having a conversation. The Christian said, The Christian kept on asking. He kept on talking. The man said, not only am I sick, but I'm in trouble. He said, Christian said, tell me about man said, I gotta go to court.
He said, you're going to court. You got to go to court. The Christian said, that's all right. He's going to court.
He kept on talking. Man said, you see,
you're out of work. Tell me about it.
One more thing, the man we know and told him.
Yeah.
I love it because it brings us to salvation. Way back on the side.
I see, I see.
All of that on the way to heaven. I can enjoy it. I'm having a good trip. Wouldn't change that.
Somebody needs the Lord to breathe on them tonight. Headache, pain, aching in your body. God is able to see you through that storm. I want to stand here with you tonight. Your healing is a moment away. Psalm 51, Psalm 98, and Psalm 65.
Found the need when you were burdened, and there might have been people around you, but nobody that you could talk to. Has there ever been a time like where everybody in the house was asleep? And because of the need in your life, you found yourself talking to God. Now you know there's one thing that thought that God don't see you and God don't talk back. But I know that's not right. I talked to him this morning. And sometimes you have to be still and know. Hello, anybody here feel like talking like this? Sometimes mama's there, mom's there, grandma, wife is there, children around, but you can't talk to them. Because they don't understand the situation. You can't talk to friends because they well, but they just have a gossiping nature. Before you can hang up, your good friend calls your good friend. And your good friend calls your good friend. But it gets back to you. Sometimes you just have to be a little more in the stillness of your life. We sing a song here in the temple that says, any way you bless me, Lord, I'll be satisfied. And sometimes you just have to ask God, Lord, let it be for me. I'll be all right if it is the breath of the Lord.
I used to always look at that sign, you know, come on, own your own home. But one day I just said, okay, I'm going to talk to the banker. And he did tell me, no, it's not possible. He told me anything was possible. Hi, I'm Veronica, and this is my banker, Roger. Who knows how to do more with less nasal polish? No, there's no. Okay.
I'm like the writer that says, you don't have to make no special trip to bless me. But why is your next door blessing my neighbor? Do not ask me why.
It's kind of old fashioned. This was my choice all the way to Taylor Song. I reached way back in. Way back. Young folks won't do it, but some of the older people might.
God, God.
Enough
God working in this period of the 20th century. The way that men in some strange way are responding. Something is happening in our world. Masses of people are rising up. Wherever they are assembled today, whether they are in Johannesburg, South Africa,
he completed his studies with a bachelor's degree. He earned a doctorate in sociology and economics, a master's degree in theology from Crowther Theological Seminary in 1951, and a doctorate in philosophy from his college in Boston in 1955. After graduating from Crowther's College, King moved to Ebenezer in Atlanta. He became a Baptist minister and served on the board of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, B-E-R-M-I-N-H-A-M campaign. The Montgomery bus boycott is a civil rights movement that took place in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955. The boycott was initiated by the Montgomery Improvement Society, organized by Martin Luther King Jr., and lasted for over a year. Rosa Parks, an African-American woman who refused to give up her seat for a white passenger on a segregated bus, was arrested. The boycott is considered one of the most important events that led to the desegregation of public buses in Montgomery and helped start the civil rights movement in America. The boycott supported him, Dr. King, and other civil rights activists and helped rally support for their cause, opposition and assassination attempts. Martin Luther King Jr., January 15, 1929 to April 4, 1968. Was an American clergyman, activist, and prominent leader of the African-American civil rights movement. He is best known for promoting civil rights through nonviolent civil disobedience based on Christian beliefs, inspired by Mahatma, his Gandhi's nonviolent activism. He was a civil rights activist early in his career. He led his bus boycott in Montgomery in 1955 and served as the first president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, in 1957. A year later, he helped found the Voter Education Project, VET. This project addressed voter registration for African Americans. King's efforts led to the 1963 March on Washington, where he delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. That speech became a pivotal moment in the movement to finally bring attention to the ongoing issue of racism in America and won the Nobel Peace Prize Award. He recommitted to ending poverty and ending the Vietnam War until his death in 1968. He also began to move away from nonviolence to what he called active nonviolence. King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee on April 4, 1968. The Presidential Medal of Freedom and the Congressional Gold Medal was posthumously awarded to him. Martin Luther King Jr. Day has also been a public holiday in many cities and states since 1971 and a federal holiday in the United States.
Probably the largest group in this other America in proportion to its size in the population is the American Negro. American Negro finds himself living in a triple ghetto. Ghetto of race, a ghetto of poverty, a ghetto is to deal with this problem, to deal with this problem of the two Americas. We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now let me say that the struggle for our civil rights, the struggle to make these two Americas one America, is much more difficult today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. For about a decade or maybe 12 years, we struggled all across the South in glorious struggle to get rid of legal, overt segregation and all of the humiliation that surrounded that system of segregation. In a sense, this was a struggle for decency. We could not go to a lunch counter in so many instances and get a hamburger or a cup of coffee. We could not make use of public accommodation. Public transportation was segregated. Our
and we had to sit in the back, and transportation within cities, we often had to stand over empty seats because sections were reserved for white schools. We did not have the right to vote in so many areas of the South. The struggle was to deal with these problems. And certainly they were difficult problems. They were humiliating conditions. By the thousands, we protested these conditions. We made it clear that it was ultimately more honorable to accept jail cell experiences than to accept segregation and humiliation. By the thousands, students and adults decided to sit in at segregated lunch counters to protest conditions there. When they were sitting at those lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for the best in the American dream, seeking to take the whole nation back to those great wells of democracy, which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Many things were gained as a result of these years of struggle. 1964, the Civil Rights Bill came into being after the Birmingham movement did a great deal to subpoena the conscience of a large segment of the nation to appear before the judgment seat of morality on the whole question of civil rights. After the Selma movement in 1965, we were able to get a voting rights bill. All of these things represented strife. But we must see that the struggle today is much more difficult. It's more difficult today because we are struggling now for genuine equality. Much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. Much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It is much easier to integrate a public park than it is to make genuine quality integrated education a reality. So today we are struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality, not merely a struggle against behavior toward Negroes. And I'm convinced that many of the people who supported us in the struggle in the South are not willing to go all the way now. I came to see this in a very difficult and painful way in Chicago the last year where I lived and worked. Some of the people who came quickly to march with us in Selma and Birmingham were active around Chicago. And I came to see that so many people who supported morally and even financially what we were doing in Birmingham and Selma were really outraged against the extremist behavior of Bull Connor and Jim Clark toward Negroes rather than believing in genuine equality for Negroes. And I think this is what we've got to see now, and this is what makes the struggle much more difficult. So as a result of all of this, we see many problems existing today that are growing more difficult. It's something that is often overlooked, that Negroes generally live in worse slums today than 20 or 25 years ago. In the North, schools were more segregated today than they were in 1954 when the Supreme Court's decision on desegregation was ruined. Economically, the Negro is worse off today than he was 15 and 20 years ago. So the unemployment rate among whites at one time was about the same as the unemployment rate among Negroes. But today the unemployment rate among Negroes is twice that of whites. And the average income of the Negro is today 50% less than whites. As we look at these problems, we see them growing and developing every day. We see the fact that the Negro economically is facing a depression in his everyday life that is more staggering than the depression of the 30s. The unemployment rate, the nation as a whole, is about 4%. Statistics would say from the Labor Department that among Negroes it's about 8.4%. But these are the persons who are in the labor market who still go to employment agencies to seek jobs until they can be calculated. The statistics can be gotten because they are still somehow in the labor market. There are hundreds of thousands of Negroes who have given up. They've lost hope. They come to feel that life is a long and desolate corridor for them with no exercise. So they no longer go to look for a job. There are those who would estimate that these persons who are called the discouraged persons, these 6 or 7% in the Negro community, that means that unemployment among Negroes may well be 16%. Among Negro youth in some of our large urban areas, it goes to 30% and 40%. So you can see what I mean when I say that in the Negro community, that is a major, tragic, and staggering depression that we face in our everyday lives. Now the other thing that we've got to come to see now that many of us didn't see too well during the last 10 years, that is that racism is still alive in American society and much more widespread than we realize. We must see racism for what it is. It is the myth of the superior and the inferior race. It is the false and tragic notion that one particular group, one particular race is responsible for all of the progress, all of the insight, total flow of history. And the theory that another group or another race totally depraved, innately impure, and innately inferior. In the final analysis, racism is evil because its ultimate logic is genocide. Hitler was a sick, tragic man who carried racism to its logical conclusion. He ended up leading a nation to the point of killing about 6 million Jews. This is the tragedy of racism because its ultimate logic is genocide. One says that I'm not good enough to live next door to him. One says that I am not good enough to eat at a lunch counter or to have a good, decent job or to go to school with them merely because of my race. He is saying consciously or unconsciously that I do not deserve to exist. Use the philosophical analogy here. Racism is not based on some empirical generalization. It is based rather on an ontological affirmation. Is not the assertion that certain people are behind culturally or otherwise because of environmental conditions. It is the affirmation that the very being of a people is inferior. This is the great tragedy of it. I think that however unpleasant it is, we must honestly see and admit that racism is still deeply rooted all over America, still deeply rooted in the North, still deeply rooted in the South. Now this leads me to say something about another discussion that we hear a great deal. That is the so-called white backlash. I would like to honestly say to you that the white backlash is merely a new name for an old phenomenon, not something that just came into being because shouts of black power, or because Negroes engaged in riots in Watts, for instance. Back then, the state of California voted a firehousing bill out of existence before anybody shouted black power, or before anybody rioted in Watts. May well be the shouts of black power and riots in Watts and the Harlems and the other areas are the consequences of the white backlash rather than the cause of it. What it is necessary to see is that there has never been a single solid monistic determined commitment on the part of the vast majority of white Americans. The whole question of civil rights and on the whole question of racial equality. This is something that truly impels all men of goodwill to admit. It is said on the Statue of Liberty that America is the home of exile. It has not been sustained. From Africa.